Thank you, Bernie. Can everybody hear me? Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to tune into my session today. I'm going to be talking about something that's really important to me, is measuring content marketing effectively. There's a lot of hype around using social media and using content marketing to, you know, impact results. But in many cases, way too often, organizations have no idea what direction they're going in. They don't understand their goals, and this is a big problem. And I want to help correct that today. So as many of you may know, content marketing has been really adopted by many organizations. 88% of B2Bs, 77% of B2C organizations have invested time, resources, and talent into getting content marketing correctly, according to the Content Marketing Institute report. But of that majority of marketers, respondents from the survey, more than half don't know what success looks like with content marketing. Again, this doesn't really make any sense. If you're investing in something, but you don't know what you're looking to achieve, then it's likely that you're not going to reach that goal. You're kind of just operating on luck, and that's not good enough when you're investing time and resources. A good thing, though, half of the B2C and B2B marketers surveyed in this report said that they're going to be adding to their content marketing budget in 2016. And I highly suggest, if any of you are increasing your budget in the future, to really focus on measurement and setting up a proper measurement framework as a part of a greater content marketing strategy to set yourself up for success from the start. But it's easier said than done. There's a lot of key challenges that are going to hold you back, and I want to address some of those so we can help set the stage on how to solve this problem appropriately. So first, as you probably know, the content marketing landscape is really complex. There's a million vendors, tons of tools to use, a new late and great social media channel pops up every day, and it can, this, all these options can be really overwhelming. And I want to help focus your emphasis on content marketing with the framework I'm about to go over. There's a lack of experience from a lot of marketers and brand managers and business owners investing in content marketing. Content marketing isn't new. In the early 1900s, Jell-O actually went, the founder of Jell-O went door to door handing out a book of recipes about how to incorporate Jell-O into your meals, right? We've all heard of the Michelin star rating system, which was actually created by Michelin tires, right? They were trying to encourage people to travel more. And when they travel, they were hoping they would drive. And when they're driving, use their tires on your car. So it's been happening for a long time, but content marketing is new in the sense that traditional advertising isn't really working in a lot of ways. And that's why a lot of organizations are trying to adopt it to really cut through the noise and get to their audience. The way consumers interact with content across devices makes it really difficult to attribute the impact content has at times. Some of these problems aren't yet fixed, and you should just be aware of them, that there is limitations. Some of these problems with attribution are fixed by investing in the right technology solutions. For example, if I'm on my mobile device and I'm looking for materials to build a new fence from Home Depot, I read an article about how to build a fence from their blog, then I look around at different products, and I'm at work at my desk looking at my mobile phone, and then I put my phone down and I move throughout my day. Then later, 2 days later, a day later, in both cases, I'm not signed in to their website. I go back to Home Depot's site. I'm looking at the similar stuff. I'm not signed in, so there's no real history for them to look at for me. And in many cases, if they don't have the right tools and infrastructure set up, that their analytics are going to equate me as two separate people. And that kind of really splits the data and doesn't really give you a firm sense of what's happening and what kind of impact content has. So again, it's just good to be aware of some of the limitations and some of the solutions out there that can help you get around some of them. It's still really new. We're all new to this in a lot of ways. And then the biggest challenge facing proper content measurement is most organizations don't have a written content marketing strategy. Only 32% of B2Bs have a written content marketing strategy, and only 37% of B2C organizations have a written content strategy. And that written means, in a Google Doc, in a Word doc, written on a piece of paper, not a verbal content strategy, not one that's in your content manager's head, not one that's spread across emails. Research studies consistently show that organizations that have a content strategy perform better in every area of content marketing because they have a plan to direct their efforts. So with those challenges in mind, I'm going to help set up a framework for measuring the ROI of your content marketing. This is the most important slide I'm going to reference today, and it's going to frame the rest of our conversation. So I recommend a 5-step framework for effective content measurement of your content marketing efforts. So the first step is to think. Think about what your goals are, discuss them, plan, and select one to move forward with. Step 2, specify who your audience is that you're going to be trying to reach with content. Step 3, commit to a specific type of content, a specific format of content. Step 4, pair metrics that match with the goals you're going after and the formats of content you're investing in. And step 5, calculate. Use tools, set up a toolkit for yourself that'll help empower, help automate some of the more repetitive processes, and make it easier for you to succeed with content on a regular basis. So let's dive into each of those. So step 1, think. Think about what you're actually trying to achieve with content. You have to set a goal to understand where you're going. Otherwise, you're just following the competition, doing this to look cool and be sexy on the latest channel, right? You have to have a goal in mind to understand, you know, what success is, how this is actually going to be impactful. So some potential goals that you could consider for content marketing, increasing your brand's health, right? Positioning your brand in the right light, further establishing your authority in a particular area, generating sales. Did investing in a podcast or infographic actually generate any revenue? Operational efficiency. If you're internally or through customer service, you're receiving the same questions over and over again, maybe you should be developing content internally to help answer those and solve some problems. So those are just some of the many, many goals you could potentially invest in. But if you don't understand what types of goals you're actually looking for, here are a few great questions to ask yourself as a team so that you can better understand how content can help fill any gaps. So one question is, where does your organization fit in the industry overall? How do you compare to competitors? What's your legacy, your history? What are your pain points? What problems do you have as a company? Not content marketing specific, but your pain points as an organization. You have a smaller budget, too many products to focus on, scattered audience. Whatever your pain points are, you have to better understand them. What are you already doing with content? Do you have a semblance of a content marketing strategy? Do you just have copy on your website? Thinking about what you're doing already so you can kind of audit your existing efforts. What gaps are there in your content strategy? So not only do you want to identify your pain points as a company overall, but also what issues are you facing with content? And then lastly, where do you need help? I'm a content marketing consultant. I help with these kind of things. Or do you need an agency? Do you need to hire a content team in-house? Having all these considerations in mind can help you really direct what you're actually trying to do with content in the first place. So from there, when you start to narrow down, you need to plan and discuss, continue to think about what you're trying to achieve, and make sure that all the important stakeholders are on the same page and in agreement, and get this as a really important part, integrate it as a really important part into your content strategy. Step 2, so step 1 was think, pick your goals. Step 2 is to specify your audience. So who is your audience? Do you know? Is it podcast listeners, millennial parents, drag enthusiasts like me? Who are you trying to reach on a regular basis? Because this will inform what you're doing down the future. In the future, you don't want to talk to everybody. You want to talk to the people that your offerings are catered to. Now, some of you have a very clear-cut understanding of who your audience is. Some of you may have no idea. Maybe some of you in the middle, where you can always learn more about who your audience is to better cater your content and your offerings as an organization. There are two ways that I recommend really niching down to understand who your audience is. One is a really big approach and one's a little smaller and more feasible. But this approach is built off of Simon Sinek's golden circle concept that he brought up in one of his more famous TED Talks. I say this is the bigger approach because this doesn't only help you with content marketing, but this helps better position your organization as a whole and help you understand what you stand for. So this concept with the why in the middle and the how and the what at the on the outer circle, Simon Sinek identified this pattern in the most successful companies in the world, like Google and Apple. And what they do differently is they communicate, execute against, and structure their organizations around why. Answering the question, why? Why do they exist? What is their why? What is their cause? Why do they wake up in the morning? Really channeling the greater meaning behind their organization, as opposed to most organizations that start on the outside of the circle with the what and the how, right? I sell printers, that's the what, and the how, the differentiator is my printers are cheaper and faster and more efficient. But there's no story there. It's more fuzzy as to why you would have customers would have a relationship with a company that did that. So really think about why your organization exists, and that can help tie in better who you're trying to reach. When you have an understanding like Apple likes to, their why is challenging the status quo and thinking differently. That's their why. And that is seen through how they execute all their products, and no matter what product they're producing, that is a consistent theme across all of them, and that can really help you kind of narrow down. The easier approach is kind of working with what you've got. So if you have analytics, refer to them, see if you can identify any patterns and behavior from your audience. Check out third-party research like Nielsen, eMarketer. Set up a survey or focus group. And then also using social listening. It's been talked about a lot at this conference already. Social listening can help you understand the greater landscape, the conversations happening about your brand or your product category or your sector, etc., better informing you what your audience is talking about and how you can better match with them. One example of an organization doing this really well and really specifying who their audience is GoPro. We're all familiar with GoPro, the action camera brand. What they did with social listening to really understand their audience is in the earlier days, they noticed that by the nature of their products, people were uploading their footage of them doing action sports and whatnot on YouTube. So easy in a sense for them because their products literally capture content. But they could have let this go and not done anything with it. But instead, they consistently monitored and noticed a pattern that their key audience, the people that are most engaged and loyal to what their products and their brand are, athletes, thrill seekers, world travelers. So they figured that they should continue to message them to engage with that audience and expand upon it with content. So what they would do is pull the user-generated content, optimize it a bit, add a beginning slide to it, up the production quality a bit, and really continue to push that out on YouTube and other channels, but mainly a YouTube effort to engage them further, all coming from a better understanding of who their audience is. So they are not my client, I didn't ask them, but these are educated guests on what their goals might have been from such a content initiative, right? I talked about the first step, thinking about your goals. So in the beginning process of them really investing in engaging their customer base with this content, they likely thought about customer engagement, like I just mentioned, further interacting with the people they've identified as their core audience, increased revenue. Did this drive more sales? Did this effort starting in 2013 drive a greater year-over-year sales than the previous year? Can we associate that with content? And lastly, audience development. Were they able to build a much larger subscriber base, as well as an email list to further engage their most loyal audience? Step three. So first, you think about your goals. Two, you specify your audience. Three, commit to the right types of content. I like to think of this as like a Thanksgiving Day table. There's many options. Similarly to content marketing, you can do podcasts and infographics and videos, and the options are can be kind of overwhelming. But just like when you fill up your plate at Thanksgiving, you're only going to pick a couple things to fill up the plate at a time. You're not going to take every single thing that's on the plate because there's other people sharing and whatnot. Often, marketers make the mistake of having bigger eyes in their stomach and trying to take on 10 different things with content and be on all the latest and greatest channels. And I refute that. I think you really need to specify, make small investments in a few different types of content instead of trying to be everywhere half-assed, right? You want to be really specific and do well in a few places and scale from there. And this will help with your measurement because you're really focused on what you're doing and what you're not doing. You know the difference. You know the distinction from the start. To kind of quantify if a content type or a specific channel that's prone to sharing content is right for your organization, I like to kind of go through these four things. So is the audience there? Does the audience that you've identified in the previous step consume this type of content? Are they active on that channel? Because if they're not, why are you producing that type of content? Why are you active on that channel? You really have to think about your audience and their needs. Subject matter. Is the type of topics you'll be covering with your content marketing actually make sense with that format of content? Do you think people want to see infographics or memes about semiconductors and the topics associated with semiconductors? Probably not, but maybe semiconductors would do really well in an infographic or long-form written content. So really understanding what subject matter would make sense. Expertise, being super self-aware and understanding, can we actually execute against this, or are we just trying to run towards whatever our competitors are doing? If you have an in-house video team, that's great, but what if you're not so good at writing? That stinks. That's fine, but that doesn't mean you should, you know, invest in writing tomorrow. Maybe you should reconsider, keep that top in mind, get outside help, or figure out what you need to, you know, bring your expertise up to the right level. And then uniqueness. Are you going to be saying the same exact thing with this format of content? Is there any way for you to stand out? Do you have messaging that's unique? Because that's really important to think about from the start. You don't want to just keep saying the same things that are already said on Facebook in relation to visuals or whatever it may be. An example of B2B, the GoPro is the B2C example. Here's the B2B with really committing to a certain type of content. Autodesk is an engineering software. They have tons of products, and they decided to create a branded content site, kind of like a blog, called Line Shape Space. It's focused on the future of making things. And what they do is they regularly discuss what's going to be coming in the coming months and years in the manufacturing and the engineering space. They make clear stances about what their viewpoints are, kind of clarifying their why they exist, like sharing articles about ocean sustainability and how that impacts manufacturing, increasing more women to join the manufacturing ranks, and removing bias. And then everything to 3D printing, right, where they're covering a couple different niches, but they all ties back to why they exist. They've been invested in this content site that they're regularly updating weekly. It's been a great source of a few different things for them: traffic, sales, engaging their customers, winning them industry awards, and it's because they took the time to plan ahead how we're going to execute this correctly with a content strategy, and these are our goals. Some goals that they likely committed to in that effort: customer engagement. So not only engaging new people that might be interested in their software offerings, but also engaging their existing customer base to educate them about Autodesk more so that those customers can be advocates for them in the space and talk about Autodesk intelligently to other people, further spreading the word of mouth through content as the first touch point. Increased revenue, is this getting more people to sign up? Is this helping us generate money in other areas because this is a cost saving as compared to traditional advertising? Developing thought leadership through talking about the future of their industry and the future of the use of their products, are they able to generate more press mentions across, you know, the media? Are they able to increase their share of voice in their market? all things that they, you know, kept top of mind when first integrating and committing to that type of content. And step four is pairing your metrics with your goals. So first goal is to think about what goals you want. Two is to specify your audience. Three is to commit to the right type of content. And four is to pair metrics that match with your goals and the content types you're going after. So a metric is just a unit of measure to help you understand if you're reaching your goal or not, right? So for example, here's three example goals with potential pairings that you can match up. These aren't exactly what you should do. The metrics you choose will vary upon what you're looking to achieve and a lot of other variables, but here are some examples. So if with content, your overarching goal is to increase conversions, then maybe you're going to be looking at email subscribers. Do you consider that a conversion? Maybe you're going to be looking at sales. That's a conversion to your organization. If you're looking at engagement as an overarching goal, some metrics to pair with it might be comments on the blog, might be more time on site from content. Again, these are some of the many examples. I would recommend pairing 2 to 3 metrics per goal that you activate on for any campaign just to help get the right balance. Something else to keep in mind is the difference between vanity and actionable metrics. Vanity metrics are surface level metrics that only let you see so much about an activation, whereas when you look at an actionable metric, one that's more meaningful to your business's bottom line, you kind of get the full story. So for example, if your content campaign was only focused on page views, right, driving traffic to your site and increasing page views, that's it, and you saw this continued to increase, and you only looked at that, wow, this seems like this content effort is a home run. But then if you actually looked a little more deeply and analyzed a couple more metrics, hence why I always recommend there being at least 2 to 3 metrics per goal, revenue wasn't impacted in no way. And I'm sure there's other metrics and other variables at play here, but if you only saw the increasing page views, that's one story you might see from that. But then if you look at both side by side, it's kind of like, well, damn, did this actually work? Are we driving the wrong people to our site? You know, what's the balance here? So I don't think you should get rid of vanity metrics altogether. Vanity metrics are very surface level, like comments on a blog, a Facebook like, page views that don't really show deeper connection, deeper engagement, and actual ones are far more meaningful. So I would suggest finding the right balance between the two and incorporating both of them. They're not useless, but they don't tell the full story on their own. And again, I would pair 2 to 3 metrics with every goal, and I would focus on about 2 to 3 goals per content campaign. There's no exact rule. It's just like a point to reference. I like that because you're not working in a silo, only looking at one goal or one metric and not understanding the full picture and the rest of the results. But then that's also limiting what you're doing so that you're not looking at 30 data points for everything you're doing, overwhelming your team, your staff, making measurement a burden, right? Trying to find the right balance that works for you. It's the whole goal here. An example of metrics that this organization might pair with their efforts, this is Bravas Foods, a food truck and a restaurant in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They have a fantastic small business, fantastic visual content marketing strategy. They're regularly posting wonderful videos and photos that really illustrate the brand, illustrate their food, you know, burgers and different types of American food, their perspective, events happening at the restaurant, and they've built a sizable audience for a small, you know, one-shop business. From that campaign, I would assume that they're trying to impact sentiment, increase revenue, develop an audience, and some metrics to consider that they might pair with those goals. So if they're trying to impact sentiment, so impacting sentiment is making sure that people regard their restaurant in a positive light, right? They don't want to have a lot of negative interactions, not ideally. They'll come up, but has this content and putting it out there on a consistent basis actually impact the way people feel about the company? So some metrics to quantify that. Are they getting more positive reviews on Yelp and different kind of rating apps? Are they getting more positive comment cards in store? For sales, they regularly share coupon codes and have in-store events that tie back to what they were sharing on social media and with these visuals? And can you quantify, can you connect the two? Did one event, a lot of coupon codes get redeemed? Is that something we can use to tie back if we're actually getting sales and increasing in-store visits? Audience development, I would say that's kind of like a vanity goal in a lot of way, but it's still impactful. Building a social following, not so important the number, right? But how engaged that audience is, and they're really engaged for a small business. They've got a ton of interaction on their Instagram from that. And one way to measure that success is the scale of their audience, and then also scaling their email subscribers from the social audience. So converting their most loyal members of their social audience to their email list so that they can alert them about new menu additions, upcoming events, et cetera, further engaging with them and developing a rapport, positive sentiment, and a nice audience for them. The fifth and final step is to calculate. Calculate what you're doing with setting up a reporting system, and a reporting system should be set up with a whole measurement toolkit. And by setting up a toolkit, I mean there's no one tool out there that can measure your content efforts 100%. There's no one tool out there that'll measure your social efforts 100%. You kind of have to have a couple tools as a part of your kit to fact check the other tools, to give you a full sense of what's happening. And no tool can possibly marry all the different channels, types of content. So my recommendation is to start now testing out different tools, taking the 30-day free trials, seeing what works for you, because now at this point, this is step five, with the previous four steps, you have a greater understanding of what you're looking for from a tool, what you're trying to measure. So that's why this comes at the end, because once you have an understanding of the types of content, audience, metrics, then you know to look for that in your specific tools you're using. Some recommendations of mine, there's all different types of content measurement tools. So there's some that help with web analytics, so that'll help you see how content marketing fits your greater marketing mix online. So I like to use Google Analytics. Adobe Analytics does a great job of kind of attributing the impact of content on your other efforts. In terms of tools specifically made for measuring content marketing, there's Parsley, there's Chartbeat, really helpful, really, 2016 tools to helping you understand what's happening with content and your ongoing efforts. And lastly, content tools that help with different areas of content marketing. So for example, what are your competitors doing with content? What's working for them on social, on these different channels, and what's not working for them? So Unmetric gives you competitive benchmarking as to what's happening with other people's content. And then there's BuzzSumo, a tool that helps you understand the types of content online around specific subjects and topics that are resonating on different communities and on social media and stuff. So give you a greater sense of what's happening and how you can use that to measure your own pathway, your own content efforts. Define a timeline. So make sure that you understand, is this an ongoing effort? Are we blogging or podcasting or what have you all the time, regularly, consistently? Or is this a short-term campaign, 3 months, 2 months, a month, holiday specific, 6 weeks, whatever it may be, so that you can better define your reporting cadence of how often you're going to be using these tools to generate reports for you. So your reporting should vary, especially with content, depending on the stakeholder, depending on the person viewing the report. So if your CMO is reviewing your report on content success, they probably want to see a higher level, granular. They don't need to see all the nitty-gritty. Maybe they only view the report once a month. Whereas the content manager or whoever's touching content on a daily, weekly, maybe bi-weekly basis needs to see much more specific, the video views on that specific video, the engagement on that specific article, and they need a more frequent, more detailed report. So any tool that you use, you should be able to get great reporting that you can cater to different needs and different job roles. And I'll leave you with this. A goal without a plan is just a wish. So if you're looking to execute content marketing without understanding how you're going to measure success, then I don't think you're going to succeed. I really recommend taking the time to map out an in-depth written content marketing strategy, and then implying a really thoughtful kind of measurement framework within that strategy to see success. If you liked what I talked about today, I have a weekly newsletter where I'm constantly sharing articles about for myself and others about content marketing and social, hype-free. I like to cut through and just tell you what actually works and what actually doesn't. If you just text 44222 and the text message is Las Vegas 2016, you can automatically opt into the list. And when you do, you'll get a 30-page content marketing style guide that I put together that'll really help you get on your feet and better optimize and set up what you're doing with content when it comes to written content. So that's a nice little freebie if you sign up. And this is just for the email list. I won't be texting you tonight. And it'll prompt you to send over the email, and we'll stay in touch from there. Any questions?
All right. You all know the drill? First one, raise the hand, gets the mic.
Hey there.
Hi. Thanks for laughing at all my drag stuff.
Well, thank you for sharing your charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
Girl.
What I'm curious about is how you feel about giving really strong call to actions within content, right? Like my experience is a little bit that people love to do nothing. So yeah. If the video just exists as a video and it ends with your logo, or if the blog post or social post just exists as information sharing, then they're not prone to do the things that you would want them to do, whether it's sign up for your email list or anyway, you see where I'm going. Just thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And it's balance. It's understanding the context in which someone is viewing whatever form of content. And I think there's a way to overdo it where you're asking them to sign up a million times or buy your product, and that is off-putting and a terrible situation. But then, in my opinion, if you don't ask anything at the end, right, you don't make it easy for them to take whatever desired action you want them to take, then they'll consume the content and go, right? It's about finding the right balance. It's completely contextual. The New York Times did a branded content ad with, I think it was Calvin Klein, where they kind of focused on this ballet studio and like kind of the history of ballet and how that kind of tied in with the clothing brand, et cetera, et cetera. And that was a really big branding play, right? They didn't have any strong call to action, buy our clothes or anything, but at the very end, it was just like, this is produced in conjunction with the New York Times and Calvin Klein, right? And just like a quick logo, super light. And I think that works with a big brand kind of activation, right? But with a blog post on your own site or a podcast, I don't think it's off-putting at all to at the end or in the middle or at the very beginning to call out who you are, what you do, really succinctly. It's just about balance and making sure that people are lazy, as you called out, making it really easy for them to take those actions. So it's very contextual. It's hard to say one way or the other, but it's just balance, making sure it's easy, but making sure you're not overwhelming them either.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great presentation.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned not using vanity metrics to measure success, most specifically on like social media, you said the likes and things like that, but using what's converting and what's driving traffic back to your website. So my question is more directly, I think, for Facebook, that becomes more of a harder one to measure that because it is meant for engaging and not so much sharing just only the content that's directing back to your blogs. So when does it come appropriate and how would you do that mix, I guess, of building a good way for people to stay connected in there and engaging with likes without always pushing back your website, you know, with content on it to drive that traffic?
Sure.
Is there a good balance or what do you use?
Yeah. So one thing you said in the beginning, that not to use vanity metrics, I want to definitely clarify, you certainly should as a balance of the mix, right? I just don't want you to only look at something as sometimes meaningless as how many Twitter followers we have or how many likes we have on Facebook, right? But those things matter as a part of a greater mix. That's what I'm saying. So to answer your question, again, it goes back to defining in the beginning what exactly you're trying to achieve. So I like to think for Facebook specifically, so you're trying to engage people and have conversations where they already are. So I would have a percentage of the content you're sharing on there meant for sharing and staying on Facebook itself, right? And then I would say kind of conversion. So driving a qualified referral traffic, whether it's from an organic post about a blog post you did, or whether you're paying for Facebook ads to drive traffic from a specific audience to your site. And the conversion, you know, has to be defined by you. Do you consider just getting traffic there a conversion? Do you consider them taking a deeper action once they get to the site, like downloading a style guide, whatever? But it's pure, like you said, it's purely a mix. Because if you are way too gunning for sales and driving money from this, then you know that's off-putting, and you're looking too much in a silo. I think it's really important to look at the full picture and focus on 2 to 3 goals. I think that's the overarching short answer is focus on 2 to 3 goals, mix your time, and continue to experiment and see what works. Because what works for me helping a beauty brand may not work for whatever you're working on, right? So it's just like kind of seeing what the match is. You're welcome.
Other questions?
If you think back 2 years ago or 3 years ago to what you thought about Facebook and what it would be like today, where were you wrong?
Where was I wrong? I didn't think it would be such a money-making machine that it is today. I didn't think that it would have such an audience. Like you said 2 years ago? For a long time, I really felt it was slanted to younger people because it started kind of from that. But within the last 2 years, especially with Facebook, you start to realize that more parents are on there. You know, I'm 28. My parents were on Facebook within the last year or so. And that has changed the way people use the social network in a lot of ways. That's why a lot of teens are going to other platforms where they can kind of be more anonymous and not have mom and dad looking at them or whatnot. So I'm just immensely impressed and I'm surprised how successful they are in terms of being a real business that drives revenue and results for people that, you know, pay for their advertising, and also just how vast their audience is. There's pros and cons with, you know, having such a vast audience, but I think it's pretty interesting, and I'm excited to see how Facebook will exist in 10 years, because they certainly will, without a doubt. Just in what form, who knows, but they're smart enough to make bets ahead of time.
We have time for one more question.
I'd like your marketing guide, but I was getting an error message.
Oh, no.
Should we?
Okay. Simple fix.
Way.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So instead of texting me or a friend, you would text 44222, and then the text message is all one word, Las Vegas 2016. It's just Vegas?
Yeah. Oh. It's getting a lead digit identifier not recognized.
Okay. All right, sorry about that.
Is there an email address or something?
I'm far from perfect, so if it's just Vegas, that works. Okay, sorry about that. So either try that, Vegas 2016, or just go to brianhonigman.com/newsletter. There's a form on there. You sign up, and you'll automatically receive the thing. Sorry about that.
Brian, welcome to my club of imperfection. Thank you for an awesome presentation.
Thank you.
Let's hear it for Brian Honigman.